The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show that answers the question,
is it possible to make a vowel sound out of a potato?
Can the word potato be a verb?
What about an actual potato? Can that be a verb?
What about the word verb? Can the word verb be a verb? Can it be a potato?
Mama, I'm scaring myself.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We talk about everything on this show. Some of it is a ton of fun. Some of it is very serious. I think fun is important. I think serious things can be very important. We're talking about something very important right now. My guest, thank God, is Ezra Levant from Canada. What part of Canada do you live in?
I'm in Toronto.
Never heard of it. Okay, so you live in Toronto, and you have, as you were saying in our previous hour, a particular insight into what's happening in the UK. Obviously, you're connected with the UK, and you've been sharing with us about the so-called Muslim rape gangs. Most of this is too horrible for most of us to face. We would like to think that we can just ignore it. It's something that's going on over there. I think it's scandalous that the mainstream media in America and the conservative media in America has effectively ignored this, because it's not only happening in the UK, it's also happening in Germany. Laura Logan experienced this. This is a real phenomenon in cultures where it is normative to behave as dramatically differently as we can imagine from what we think is okay behavior. You're saying that in certain parts of Pakistani culture, it is normal, it is accepted for young men to serially rape women who are not of their ilk. They are considered fair game. That's just something that is politically incorrect to talk about. And you're telling me that in the UK in particular, people don't talk about this, that they're afraid of being labeled racist. What has happened to the great British people that they're allowing themselves to be treated like this?
Well, it's all the elites, all the establishment institutions. This challenges their beliefs in open borders immigration, in multiculturalism, in diversity is our strength, in we can all unite. Because if they were to say this is unacceptable, this is outside the four corners of what we accept as multiculturalism, then they would have to rethink so many of their ideas.
Well, look, isn't this the point, Ezra? Like, I'm an American, okay? I look at the Constitution, Declaration of Independence. There is nothing in there about all the things that you just ticked off, mm-hmm. right? About open borders, immigration, about diversity, whatever. In other words, these are just cliches du jour. The cultural elites have adopted these things as though they are holy writ, and they're not. They are ideas that ultimately don't work. They have some basis in, you know, liberal Western democracies. But the point is, once you lift them to be some kind of, you know, lapidary, engraved in stone law, you run into trouble. And that's exactly what is happening in the UK.
Well, another way to look at it is these are theories of multiculturalism and open borders. And then they're met with the facts, some of which I've told you. you can either change your theory or turn a blind eye to the fact. I think Steve Saylor says that political correctness is willfully ignoring patterns, like willfully being blind to things to preserve your pet theories. And Daniel Pipes has a phrase, the 5P professionals, the politicians, the press, the professors, the police, the prosecutors. These are all the people who are supposed to protect us. These are all the people who are supposed to protect the 1,400 girls in Rotherham. And they didn't. And each one of them for their own reasons. Policing. It's much easier to police the loudmouth Tommy Robinson, throw him in the back of a van, than the 23,000 jihadis on a watch list in the UK. It's much easier for a professor to be woke and get grants and tenure by talking about diversity and multiculturalism than by truly investigating this rape gang phenomenon.
I still, but just looking at the health of a culture, in the United States of America, I still think we have enough freedom of speech, religious freedom, other kinds of freedom, to be able to talk about these things and sort of reason together. And I think it seems to me that in the UK, I mean, if I have to say it, freedom is dead. In other words, the idea that this can go on and that you can have a queen and a parliament and that somehow these things are allowed to continue. Most people listening are thinking Ezra Levant is totally exaggerating. This can't be true. I know you're not exaggerating. So how is it possible that this can have happened to England? Because, look, this idea about immigration, we in America, we say we're a nation of immigrants. What that means is people come in, they buy into the reigning cultural norms. If they don't, they never assimilate. But what you have is immigrants in Europe who are not even being asked to assimilate, and they are effectively destroying the culture that was there before.
I was sitting in the Old Bailey, which is the highest security court in London. It's where the terrorism trials are. That's where Tommy Robinson's contempt of court case was heard. I was sitting there with all the leading journalists from what I call the media party. You know, the fancy journalists, the big journalists, the ones, you know, that work for the legacy companies. Every single one of them cheered when Tommy Robinson was sentenced. I looked around for Amnesty International, for the Reporters Without Borders. I went to a free speech conference in the UK and I asked all these lobby groups, like their version of the ACLU, what do you say about Tommy Robinson being sent to prison for contempt of court for doing what I said, for saying, how's your...
Well, first of all, let's clear that up. How is it possible he could be sent to prison for contempt of court when he didn't do anything that warrants that?
The UK courts have a special website with all their contempt of court cases on. I sat down and read 10 years worth. Typically, contempt of court is rap on the knuckles, maybe a small fine. Tommy Robinson was the first journalist sent to prison since the 1940s for contempt of court. And then he was sent to prison again.
But what did he even do to warrant? Forget about the sentence.
I saw the judge. The judge said, you prejudiced and intimidated the court by saying, quote, how do you feel about your verdict today, mate? And the irony is Tommy went into court that morning for his sentencing. Oh, I can assure you the journalists were much more aggressive than that. There is not a single journalist in the United Kingdom that opposes the censorship and imprisonment, and I have to say probably even the killing of Tommy Robinson. And I do believe he will end his life violently, either in prison, because he's been attacked in prison before. I tell you, a terrorist went to his cell and delivered a terrorist threat to his cell in prison.
So here's the question. With this happening in the UK right now, in other words, as we're sitting here, this is going on, why would all the people, when he was sentenced, all these cultural elites that are gathered, their reporters and so on and so forth, why do you suppose they would cheer him being sentenced? Why do you think they have this animus toward him? What is it based on?
First of all, there's the snobbiness. And we don't even know what snobbiness is like until you've been to the UK. And I love the UK in so many ways. But it is true they have a caste system. And Tommy is low class. Know your place. I hear your accent. You belong back there in Luton. How dare you get uppity? Again, that's that Morrissey line, nobody's nothing. Let me tell you a terrible story. And I got to tell you this story. If I heard it from anyone other than through my own eyes, I would say, don't give me a conspiracy theory. This is stuff that Alex Jones wouldn't touch. I met one of these rape victims in the town of Sunderland. It was a very long journey to Sunderland. And I arrive in probably the poorest place I've ever been. And I meet Chelsea Wright, who blacked out and woke up one day half naked in a room with five, I think they were Syrian migrants. She broke out of the house screaming into the street. Police came, found two DNA samples in her, arrested the men, and then let them go free. Chelsea's brother came down to the house to get into fisticuffs. He was thrown in prison. The police put the five, I think they were Syrian Iraqis, some Muslim migrants, put them in safe houses. So I went to meet Chelsea Wright with Tommy.
And how old is Chelsea Wright?
I never asked her. I'm going to guess. Well, she's not a teen. She's an adult.
Okay.
But I wanted to meet her and her parents and the whole family because I wanted to see, is this true? Now, I know for a fact that police investigated. I know certain things that are on the public record, but I wanted to meet Chelsea with my own eyes to size her up. Is this true? Because we were going to crowdfund a lawyer to do a private prosecution of these five rapists.
And when you say we, what's the
Rebel
entity?
News. Rebel
so
News.
Rebel News. If people want to find you, they go to rebelnews.com. We're going to go to a break. Folks, I don't expect you're going to be tuning away. You're not going to hear this anyplace else, unfortunately. I'm talking to Ezra Levant. Rebelnews.com is where you can find him. ericmetaxas.com is where you can find me. We'll be right back.
I have wandered through this world, and as each moment has unfurled, I've been waiting to awake. The city streets are empty now. The lights don't shine no more.
Hey there, folks. A little ELO for you. I'm talking to Ezra Levant, who is a journalist and who has taken on this subject, among others, of Muslim rape gangs in the UK. It is a grisly subject, and I think the more grisly something is, the more we are tempted to look away. And the mainstream media in the U.S. has looked away, to its shame, I would think. I'm thrilled, Ezra, that you have taken this on, and we need to keep going. You told me when we were at Socrates in the City with Peter Thiel, we had a private moment afterward, and you told me this story, and I said, you've got to come on my program to tell this, because Americans need to know what is going on in England.
Yeah. What I'm about to tell you, I would not believe if anyone else told it to me. And to this day, I'm thinking, did my eyes see that, and did my ears hear that? And it's why I go over there so often personally, because I believe that things so terrible are happening there, and I don't see them reported by other media. I have to go myself. So I flew to Sunderland, which is a small town south of Newcastle, to meet Chelsea Wright, this woman who woke up in this rape house, really. Police arrested five men, DNA tests, witnesses. So it's not just a he said. There's extrinsic evidence. There's neighbors calling the police. They hear a screaming woman in the street. There's the DNA. The men were arrested, put in safe houses, but set free. So Rebel News and Tommy and I were going to crowdfund. We had 100,000 petition signers for the police to lay charges. They refused. So in the UK, you can do what's called a private prosecution. You can sue under their criminal laws with your own private lawyers if the prosecutor won't. So we brought in a special lawyer who specializes in sex crimes. And Tommy was there and I was there. And we went to the house of Chelsea Wright. I wanted to meet the entire family because, to tell you the truth, I didn't know who this woman was. Is she a liar? I hate to say that, but I wanted to know before we hired a lawyer.
Well, it's kind of important to know who you're dealing
with.
And
I wanted to see her in the context of her whole family.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to know them before we embarked on this enormous and costly venture.
Right.
So there was maybe seven or eight of us, maybe 10. And the house was so small, this family so poor, that we couldn't all meet together in the house. I don't know if I've ever been in such a small house before. So we step out into the tiny backyard, and actually me and a couple of the men were speaking in the very small alley. It's so small, it was like a shoebox. And I'm wearing exactly this jacket I'm wearing today. Yeah, I'm dressed exactly like this. I'm the only one in this part of Sunderland wearing this jacket. Everyone else is dressed in their working class garb, like who wears a jacket? And I had come in a cab, And I'm there for a few hours. I spent the day there. And I see a vehicle come up the alley very slowly. And at first I think it's a fire truck. And I don't know, I think I waved or something, like I'm an idiot. And the fire truck came extremely slowly, and I saw the other man scowling. And then when it was close, I saw it had video cameras on the truck. And it paused in the backyard of Chelsea Wright's family home, and the cameras went voot, 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 voot. Facial recognition, obviously. Record, who's the guy in the jacket? Why are they talking with the Wrights? What's going on? Who's there? Who are the schemers? And I said, what's going on? And they told me, and they said, watch, it'll drive up the street into the police station. And so it did. By the way, one of the fellas there said he had a Union Jack, that's their flag, and the police told him to take it down.
I mean, I would rather live in Stalin's Russia based on what you're talking about. This is mind-blowing.
I've been to so many of these events out there. The police come with their video units. They just come with their cameras like the journalists and slowly scan the entire... Like when Tommy's on trial at the Old Bailey, this high security... 2,000-3,000 people will wait outside the court for Tommy. That's how big a phenomenon.
So he's become a popular hero.
Yeah, and the police go, and they slowly, slowly film every face in high def, and they build a facial recognition database. Tommy doesn't know who those 3,000 people are outside the court cheering for him, but the police do.
This is in England. I don't know what I thought of England, but when you say this to me, this is a dystopian nightmare come true.
And every time I get on the plane back to Canada, I think, what did I just see? And let me close with a story from the town of Oldham. Tommy tried to run for the European Parliament as an independent candidate, and he did fairly well. He didn't win. But he would go around and campaign and in all these little towns in northern England. And one town's called Oldham. And so, I don't know, 50, 100 people came to meet him, men, women, and children. A group of Muslim men took the train in from Manchester, about 100 of them. They called themselves the Muslim Defense League. And so they arrived by train, that's how they do it over there, in Oldham. But they don't know where to go. They've never been to Oldham before. They don't know where Tommy is. The police, I swear to God, and you can find this on YouTube, the police meet them at the train station, the Muslim Defense League, and walk with them, escort them to where Tommy is having his impromptu street rally, handing out literature to men, women, and children. The Muslim men, some of them wearing masks, mask up, reach into the garbage cans for bottles and bricks and start throwing them at this crowd of civilians. The women and kids are put into vehicles just to protect them from the debris. It's a full-scale riot. You can find this in a second. Just Google Tommy Robinson Oldham, O-L-D-H-A-M. We had a reporter there filming the riot. No arrests. We put this video up to show what happened. I get a call from Interpol. You know, the International Police Liaison Group. They say, Mr. Levant, can we have your footage that day? Do you have any footage you didn't publish? Because we're going to launch an investigation into the riot months later. And I actually cooperated because our reporter was hit by something. I was rather angry, and I don't like these terrorist criminals. In the footage I gave them, I cut out footage of Tommy's friends. I didn't need them to be charged. In the footage I sent Interpol for the Manchester police, I saw that there was a two-man video squad for the police there at the riot. They were there. They had two men with cameras. The cameras, the entire time, were focused on Tommy and his people, waiting in case they did anything illegal, and at the very least, databasing who was there. The Manchester police, in a riot, stayed so true to their mission of documenting who dares to stand with this troublemaker Tommy, they literally didn't turn around. The bottles are coming over their head, and so they're asking me in Canada to give them the footage. Now, I did give them the footage and a piece of my mind. That is the dystopian time machine that is the United Kingdom, and I tell you that if you stay on the course you're on, you're bound to head where you get to go where you're heading. And that's the UK, and that's Canada in 5 years, and God forbid that's America 5 years later.
Do you have any sense of, because I'm thinking of, you know, who is there? Is daddy home? What's going on? There's a queen, there's a royal family, we're all obsessed with, you know, what is going on there. And I think to myself, is no one running the country? The prime minister now, of course, is Boris Johnson. Is he aware of this? Does he care about this?
Of course, he's aware of it. And the thing is, if you give even a grudging sympathy, support, acknowledgement of this issue, you yourself are tarred as far right, which is what they call alt-right. You're called an Islamophobe. You're called a racist. And so, curiously, the more to the right you are as a politician, the more terrified you are of Tommy Robinson and this issue, because you'll be labeled. So Nigel Farage, who I regard as a hero, is terrified of Tommy because you're that right wing. You don't want to be called alt-right, far-right, which is what they say over there. So ironically, the people who would be most predisposed to digging into this issue are the most terrified of it. I tell you that the media party is so vicious. The deplatforming, the cancel culture, the demonization there is so severe. They actually went after Majid Nawaz, this Pakistani Muslim man of the Quilliam Foundation who's called out these rapists. The Southern Poverty Law Center in America called him a hater. He sued them and won a massive settlement. But even a Muslim man who speaks out against this, they'll call it Islamophobic.
This is just, it's so crazy. I'm just thrilled at least you, Ezra Levant, are looking into this. But it is amazing to me that there aren't more voices. I assume that the BBC is not interested in your point of view.
Oh, they're very interested in my point of view, to the point where on two occasions they tried to have me jailed for my reporting.
The BBC?
The BBC.
Isn't that sweet?
They literally reported my reporting to the Metropolitan Police, and then they called me to ask for my comment about their complaint. Their complaint!
We're going to be right back, folks. More with Ezra Levant. You can go to Rebel Media. We'll be right back. Folks, I'm talking to Ezra Levant. This is the Eric Metaxas Show, and we're talking about a lot of stuff. And Ezra, it seems to me, you know, as you talk, there are two Englands, right? In other words, it seems to me that in a lot of these Western European democracies, you have the cultural elites, and then you have people like Tommy Robinson and the people you've been describing in these towns, you know. They don't seem to be getting the same kind of justice. In other words, there seems to be a very ugly divide that I'm wondering what can be done about it. In other words, you are a brave voice talking about this. You've been the target yourself in Canada of I want to talk about what happened to you. Maybe we should just leap in there. Tell us the story of what happened to you writing a book about Justin Trudeau.
Yeah. Well, we just had an election in Canada in October, so there were 24 books that were published about Justin Trudeau. There's probably going to be 1,000 Trump books published this year.
Sure.
Probably 1,000.
Yeah.
So there were 24 books written about Trudeau, and my book went to number 2 on the Amazon.ca bestseller list. I mean, that's a pretty small market, but I was pleased with it. The book was called The Libranos, a takeoff of The Sopranos, because my thesis is that Trudeau, you know, he's a little bit corrupt, and I back it up as best I can. So the book was a bit of a hit, and we promoted it in our grassroots style. And then the election was over, and Trudeau won again a minority government, and then I went on Christmas holidays. And over Christmas, we received a letter by registered mail from something called the Elections Commissioner, which is like your FEC down here, alleging that my book, and I've published 10 books, I think. My book was an illegal campaign activity. And would I present myself at their headquarters for examination?
This is in Canada.
In Canada.
This is in North America, just to be clear, not very far from where we're sitting here. So what, I mean, that is a bizarre thing. Will you present yourself for examination?
And they said if I didn't, they said, we're not compelling you, but if you don't, if you do, we'll take it into account when we mete out a punishment. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go, but this isn't my first rodeo, Eric.
Yeah.
I thought, no one's going to believe me, right? I mean, I've told you a few things here today, and I know in the back of your mind you're thinking, did that really happen? Did that fire truck, spy truck really happen? I mean, did it really happen?
Yeah.
And is that really all Tommy said? How do you feel about your verdict? Like, come on. That must mean something else. I knew that two police interrogating an author about his book, I knew that no matter what I said coming into that meeting, people wouldn't believe me. They wouldn't. They wouldn't even believe the meeting happened. And so I did something I've never done in my life. I went in with a hidden camera. Two, actually, because I was so afraid I would screw it up. So I went to Ottawa, to the headquarters of our FEC, and they took me into a high-security room, and they said, no video allowed in this high-security facility. And
right.
I thought, says you, thought I.
Yeah.
They didn't search me. And I recorded the meeting.
And when was this?
This was last month.
A month ago.
Yeah,
okay.
This was late January, not quite a month ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And let me tell you the highlights.
Yeah.
But I tell you this, I recorded it because I know no one would believe that. That no one. And here's the two main things they said. It was a 1 hour conversation. The first thing I said, I said to them, can I see the complaint against me, please? And they said, no. I said, well, can I know what the complaint said? They said, no. I said, can I know who filed the complaint? Was it Justin Trudeau himself? I'm sure he didn't like the book if he read it. No, we can't show you. You can't show me. You're investigating me for a secret complaint filed by a secret person or persons, or maybe there's no complaint. I thought that was odd.
First of all, is this – I don't know the law here, much less in Canada, but it strikes me as – not normal procedure.
How can you meet a... I said, I've come all the way to Ottawa. It wasn't very far. How can I meet a complaint I can't see? Asked them five different ways, they refused. Then they said to me, and this is a killer quote, and I'm using the exact word register. And again, you wouldn't believe me if I didn't have it on tape. You can go to rebelnews.com and find it. They said, did you ever give consideration to registering your book with us as a campaign activity? See, their thesis was that by publishing a book critical of Trudeau and promoting that book and selling that book and touring with that, a little book tour, that was an illegal campaign activity. I asked them, I said, have you been investigating the other 23 books which were favorable to the Prime Minister? And one of the cops said, no, but if you'd like to make a complaint, we'll take it. No, I don't want to make a complaint. They're books. We're Canada. That cop said, he's a 30-year RCMP veteran. He's now working for the Election Commission. I Googled these two. They wouldn't give me their business cards, but I snapped a picture of their ID, and I Googled them later. These are 30-year cops that worked on counterterrorism and organized crime files. You're going after an author? And he says, did you give any thought to whether or not you'd register this book? Yeah, I gave it some thought. And I thought, thank God I don't live in Iran or North Korea. And then the last thing, and again, it's a long tape.
Actually, let's stick a pin in it. We'll be right back for the rest of the story. My goodness. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Don't go away.
All the life, there were plants and birds and rocks.
Hey there, folks. I am talking to Ezra Levant, L-E-V-A-N-T, and the URL for the video, the video you took, the secret video as they are interrogating you in Canada, which is insane that they treated you this way, is SaveRebelNews.com. SaveRebelNews.com. I hope there are some citizen journalists out there who want to write about this. This is so important that we understand what is happening in Western liberal democracies. This is a staggering development. So you've experienced this in the UK. You've experienced this in Canada. So you were just making a point, and we had to leap to this break. So where were we?
Well, the cops, when I got this threat letter over Christmas,
yeah,
I did a little video about it. I said, this is insane. We're going to fight like hell. Because I have a bit of an American spirit. I like to fight. And even though we don't have the First Amendment in Canada, we have some traces of that same. I mean, our roots go back to the UK.
Of course.
Liberty predates the First Amendment. I mean, these are ancient rights. So I wanted to fight. So I went in to meet these two cops, and they had watched my video, obviously. They watched all my videos. They're doing a lot of creeping on the Internet. And they said, we saw your video in response to our letter. You said that you timed your election book for the election. Do you want to rephrase that? Because to them, timing the book for the election was proof that it was to meddle in the election. I said, I'm not going to rephrase that. Of course I published the election book during the election. It's an election book about the election. And their thesis is that by timing my election book to the election, that somehow made it an illegal campaign act. I tell you again, there were 24 books on the same subject at the same time. You don't publish an election book the day after the election unless it's about the result. I at first thought this was so absurd, and that's why I felt so confident publishing these videos. I thought, let's all laugh at these clowns together. Surely they're not going to prosecute. But my lawyers have since followed up, and they seem dead set on prosecuting. There are five investigators on my case. Five. I mean, I don't regard what I did as meddling in the election. I regard it as participating in the election. I'm a journalist. One of the questions they asked me was, why did you write the book? Well, because I'm me. I want to express myself.
I mean, look, this sounds like nothing but corruption. That's really the word we're looking for. You have freedom on the one hand and corruption on the other. Freedom is where we all have genuinely equal rights, and we have a law that protects everyone equally. And then there's corruption, where I can pay off an official or I can bully someone and I can get my way. And it seems to me that in Europe and in Canada, you have people using excuses like, you know, political correctness is really what it amounts to, but they're using that in a way to bully people away from their freedoms. And that's what's happening to you. In other words, that this is so selective that it's obvious that some nefarious player said, let's get him.
Now, one of the reasons I videotaped this, because I knew people would be doubtful, they would be skeptical if they didn't see with their own eyes, of course.
Yep.
A particular expression of that would be, I would hope that other media would write about it. They would say, well, we don't agree with Ezra on these 99 things, but on this, yikes, the government should lay off. No, none. I had a fair amount of interest in the United States about this, but none in Canada, none. Now, I'm annoying and irritating, and I'm political, so I can understand why rival or competitor journalists would say, we don't like Ezra, but give me the part after the but, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't. And I want to tell you why I think that is. And this is a warning I bring for America also. I say again, the UK is my sad, terrifying time machine. Let Canada be your dystopian time machine. Let me tell you where some of this comes from. In Canada, we have a massive state broadcaster called the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. It's larger than all other private news media combined. So it really squashes the conversation. It determines what is or isn't allowed, who is or isn't allowed to talk in the national conversation. And every private sector journalist who's worried about being laid off from a failing newspaper is tailoring their work. Well, if my newspaper shut down, I could go work for the state broadcaster. So it's actually much more than its own size. because people are thinking ahead, well, when I'm laid off, I better go work there. But about a year ago, Justin Trudeau rolled out a private sector media bailout for all the newspapers in Canada. It's only $600 million a year, but that's like $6 billion in the U.S. because we're one-tenth the size. So imagine if the if Nancy Pelosi said, I'm giving $6 billion out for newspapers. No strings attached, guys. Really? No strings attached? You're giving $6 billion away and you're not asking for a favor in return? So all the newspapers took the dough. Well, if you're taking the American equivalent of $6 billion a year from Nancy Pelosi, and the one guy who's not taking the dough, the one guy who's not taking the bailout right. money, like in Canada, it really is 99% government journalism. Because even if you're working for a private sector newspaper, you're getting your company's getting 100 grand a week. You cannot criticize the person who's putting 100 grand a week in your pocket. So whereas I think even a year and a half ago, there would have been a few people saying, oh, this isn't a good look. Grilling an author, that's not the Canadian way. Not one voice. Not one in Canada. And you can disagree with me for 20. I'll give you 20 reasons. But whatever those reasons are, interrogating an author, and they're continuing. Like, I'm not out of the soup yet. Now, I think I'll win eventually. But the process is the punishment, too. It denormalizes you. Oh, you're under investigation.
Right.
It stresses you. It takes up your time.
Right.
I've had to lawyer up. I mean, I enjoy the fight, too. So this won't dissuade me. But I got other things I'd rather do with my time.
This is just amazing. We're at the end of our time. We're going to keep you in the building, hopefully get some more conversation with you. But as for today, we're going to have to stop. I'm just in awe of all you're doing and horrified at some of the things you're revealing. But it's so important. Ezra Levant, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Hey there, folks. This is Eric Metaxas' show. That's the Partridge Family. Mm. You heard me. Hey, we're talking to Ezra Levant. Actually, we're done today talking to Ezra Levant. We had both hours today with him. If you missed any of it, go back. We'll get it on YouTube. By the way, folks should subscribe to our YouTube channel. There are people who watch our stuff on YouTube. You go to Eric Metaxas' show, and it's all there. But please subscribe. Tell your friends to subscribe to the YouTube channel. There's many reasons for that. I won't go into it, but we'd appreciate that. Also, if you don't get our weekly newsletter, today's the last day, folks. Tomorrow, we're going to send it out. There's going to be stuff in there. You're going to be like, oh, man, I wish I had that.
I wish I had.
Seriously, we put out all the videos of this week. You're going to get both hours with Ezra Levant, both hours with Dana Lash, everything we've done this week. And tomorrow. Oh, my gosh. Albin.
Yeah. I know. Get ready.
We're launching something. Something new. Now, if you're launching something that's not new, are you really launching it? No. We're launching something new tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's called Ask Metaxas,
yes.
Or Ask Metaxas, depending on how you pronounce it. But I pronounce it Metaxas. Ask Metaxas, anything you want. You can ask me anything you want. Now, we have pre-recorded this. You can't call in.
No,
so, but what we do is we ask you to go to my website, my personal website. No one knows about it, even my wife. It's my personal website. It's ericmetaxas.com. If you go to ericmetaxas.com and you email me questions, it could be questions about anything. Could be fun questions, could be serious questions, theological questions, geographical questions, historical questions, opinion questions. Eric, what do you think about this? What do you think about that, for example?
Yes.
We will do our best to answer them on the air. We're going to try to do Ask Metaxas once a week. You know, maybe it'll expand if there are so many questions and we have so much fun. But I just thought it's a fun opportunity for me to do that, usually with Albin and Chris Himes. Chris Himes will be here tomorrow for that. So I want to say That's tomorrow. Right. And then we're going to play the last part of Ezra Levant. And we've got some Fun Facts Friday stuff.
We're going to do
tomorrow.
A truncated Fun
tomorrow
Facts Friday.
Is going to be so much fun. I hope nobody misses it.
A lot of fun tomorrow.
I really hope. Now, by the way, today, after the show, I'm flying to Louisville, Kentucky. I guess that means I'm not going to be here tomorrow. I don't know how we're going to do this. We're going to have to think carefully. But I'm flying to Louisville, Kentucky. Okay. Okay, Albin, we got a couple things to share.
Yes.
First of all, I got to remind people that we're doing a campaign with Food for the Poor. Every now and again, we'll do a campaign with Food for the Poor because they are just the best at helping people who are struggling with the basics, the absolute basics. Right now, they are focused on Guatemala. Now, Guatemala has the title. This is a horrible thing. They are number one country in the West for malnutrition. Now, let's think about that. Most people listening to this program don't even know what malnutrition is. You've never dealt with it. Okay. My mom dealt with it right after the war in Germany. They had so little food that they would get boils and other kinds of diseases just because their diet was so poor. There are people right now in 2020 in Guatemala suffering horrible malnutrition. If we don't step up, their government in Guatemala is, I don't need to tell you, utterly useless. We step up through Food for the Poor, and Food for the Poor goes in there and helps these folks. Now, here's the bottom line before we finish the program. $80 feeds one kid for an entire year. $320 feeds a family of four for an entire year. This is a magnificent opportunity. That's $27 a month. You can give that way if you prefer, to remind your family, to remind your kids what you do with your money, where your values are. The phone number is 844-863-HOPE. Our website is right there. You can go to MetaxasTalk.com. It's at the top. Or just right now, dial 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. Don't miss. This is a real opportunity, 844-863-HOPE.